Hey everybody, this is Josh. I'm just popping in here at the beginning of the episode to let you know that this is going to be a special mini campaign released by us, DM'd by our guest DM, Ian, who was kind enough to run us through a homebrew setting of Road to WrestleMagia, a fun little kind of tournament style campaign. And yeah, I hope you have fun. So we'll get into the theme music, then we'll do Ian's introduction, everyone's character introductions, and we'll get right into the action. So hope you enjoy.
When the Night of Cruelties caused a kingdom to be torn asunder, a champion was needed, and a tournament was called. Warriors from all over the world have entered, but only one will be judged worthy of the prize. Are we dead yet?
Welcome to Are We Dead Yet podcast. My name is Ian, pronouns he, they, and I'm your dungeon master for the campaign that you're about to listen to. This is Road to WrestleMagia, a wrestling-themed D&D 5e campaign. And much like in the glory days of TV wrestling, I am required by law to remind you that these are all trained performers, and you should not try any of this at home. This podcast takes no responsibility if you decide to pick up a few levels in Monk or Fighter and RKO your next-door neighbor. And like I mentioned, this mini-campaign is using the D&D 5e system you all know and love. It features five level 8 characters that make up an independent fighting roster, vying for the title of champion at Stadium Raji. Their end goal is for their group to make it to the final battle royale, where their full team will duke it out against another and be judged by not only the crowd, but their own fighting prowess to see who has what it takes to be champion. I go into more detail about the Stadium Raji and the city of Tesser that the stadium is inside of, in the following sessions. And thankfully for all of you, the whole campaign takes place in a homebrew, self-contained setting, so no need for anyone to have to study anything before listening. And just in case you want to find me afterwards, because, you know, I have a life outside of this voice that you're listening to right now, you can actually find me on Twitch, where I play Weary, the Artificer Tiefling, on the Ballad of the Seven Dice Twitch in the actual Rise of Nyarlathotep campaign. It's definitely horror, definitely a lot of body horror. There's some flesh neighborhoods you got to watch out for. And it's very much kind of cosmic horror. Our group tries their best, their darndest to, you know, make it through the day and fight off a cult of chaos by the night. And if that sounds like something that'd be interesting to you, you can definitely give us a listen either on Twitch when we're live, that's Tuesday nights at 6:30 Central Time, or on YouTube at Ballad of the Seven Dice, where you can find our YouTube videos of our sessions the day after. Just look for Ballad of the Seven Dice on all of the socials, and you should find us. And then from there, navigate your way over to our Twitch and listen to Weary be very, very anxious. You'll love it. A quick lore tidbit about something that happened in Tesser 6 months ago. It is an event called the Night of Cruelties, where a demon basically broke out of the stadium and not only killed the queen now, but the then princess's advisor, but also caused like this wave of violence to sweep over the island due to its aura of bloodlust. And that resulted in a lot of injuries, a lot of people that were like, this fighting's got to stop. It led to this demon escaping and all this stuff. But it has been 6 months since then. And the people, they have short memories. They love a good fight. So this is actually the first tournament back since the Night of Cruelties. So if there's mention of the Night of Cruelties, that's what that means. Just wanted to make sure that everyone was on the same page before we got started. And remember, you paid for the whole seat, but you're only going to need the edge.
Hello, I am Josh, and I am playing Blaine the Boulder Stevenson, the Goliath unarmed fighter. Blaine grew up perfecting his body to compete with the best of the best. The Night of Cruelties occurred while he was traveling to a discus contest. the Knight of Cruelties ruined his chances at becoming a champion-level athlete that year, but he sees WrestleMania as his chance to reach that goal. He has signed on with Verity Squall's Gold Membership as a sponsor, using his training in acting and performance as a way to grab attention from the audience and gain their support. He is a boisterous fellow who will do whatever it takes to win. His look when wrestling includes his signature costume designed by Verity Squall, a Rocky helmet, breastplate, and arm guards that have the unique ability to allow him to curl up into a cannonball for both protection and a devastating attack when jumping down from a great height. 6 years prior to WrestleMania, he met Dirk the Drunkard when reluctantly serving in a great war and became brothers in arms as they both protected each other and had each other's back during all the fighting. Blaine also met Cynthia on that same battlefield, but on opposite sides. After a long, grueling battle where neither would give in, they both passed out next to each other from pure exhaustion, forming a battle bond that has made them respect each other's skills as a warrior. The magic item I've selected for Blaine is the Ring of the Ram. And that's my character introduction.
Alrighty, here is my character intro. I am Waffles the Bard Dog from the College of Glamour. I'm an awakened dog, awakened by a sorcerer who made me be able to be like humans. I stand on my two back legs and I walk around in a onesie made out of animals from the Ranchos Consortium. I am a mascot for them and I am evil. I hate all humans and humanoids because I think they are stupid, especially the sorcerer who cast me under this spell of wretchedness. My sponsor is Ranchos Consortium because I am planning to take over all the humans. And what better way to be in disguise and be deceptive than get in with one of these stupid groups of humans to join the fight? My magic item is the Deck of Illusions. I will use it to my advantage when the time comes. My connections is that Cynthia Von Fall knows my deep, dark secret, but I am so cute that she does not take my secret seriously. I also have a connection with Takaru, and that's because he's a cat, so he is my evil, evil, most arch enemy because he is a cat. A big fat cat that I'm not scared of, but he is a cat regardless, and I hate him. My costume is a Displacer Beast onesie or any onesie that I may wear that gives me powers to benefit myself. And I will take over all the humans and show that us awakened beasts are the true, true winners of this world.
All right, I'm here to introduce Dirk the Drunkard. Champion of the people. Dirk is a drunken master monk with the folk hero background, famous for a feat he doesn't even remember. Dirk stands 5'4" tall, stout but strong, with close-cut dark hair. His face is worn and his hands well worked. Years before the war, Dirk was at his favorite bar when an unruly noble began harassing the owner for taxes he had already paid. Dirk, being a man of the people, showed the man what's what. While the bargoers were overjoyed, Dirk had pissed off the wrong people. Now banished from his home, Dirk wandered bar to bar until one night he drank so much he left his own body, and then met his master. Dirk's life now forever changed, as he dedicated himself to keeping both his mind and body in the ideal state for practicing and mastering the Drunken Master technique. Upon arrival to Tasir, to become a wrestler, Dirk was immediately scouted by the Queen's Festival to be a fighter. Here, he met his old friend, Blaine the Boulder, and after a drunken night at the temple, made a new friend in Takaru. To help him in the arena, Dirk dons the braces of defense, a bandolier of growlers, wooden sandals, and his favorite pants.
For this campaign, I will be playing as the level 8 monk, Takeru Nekomamushi, also known as the Typhoon, who practices the Way of the Open Palm. Being a Leonin, Takeru resembles a 7-foot-tall anthropomorphic lion with a golden mane, fluffy ears and tail, and all the other bits and bobs lionhood entails. Being a champion speed eater by day and famed sumo wrestler by night, he's also nearly as wide as he is tall. Hailing from a distant and foreign land, Takeru caught wind of the fabulous wealth to be had as a champion of WrestleMania and could not resist its call. Takeru is not only a big boy, but he also has a big family. One lovely wife had given him a total of 38 children, and they all take right after daddy in size and appetite. Normally, not a problem. But recently, nobody's wanted to challenge his winning streak on the sumo circuit, leaving his finances in a bit of a slump. At the risk of literally being eaten out of house and home, he needs some quick income. Alas, he can't enter with his usual stage name, the Typhoon, and wearing his signature sumo-style mawashi, both being under contract with his agent. So he's entered freelance as the humble luchador Takeru, wearing a full-body green and gold spandex bodysuit, with the sleeves torn off, of course, and matching mask, and emblazoned on the chest and back with the symbol of his sponsor, Frytan's Majestic Meals. Despite being a newcomer to Tesser, Takeru quickly found a friend in Dirk, and while celebrating their newfound friendship, they shared a drink. And then one drink became two, and then two became three, and so on, until all they could remember is waking up on the steps of the Cathedral of St. Isel and being told that they've received the saint's blessing. At another point in his exploration of Tesser, Takeru was accosted by a raving madwoman who shouted on and on about the evil fluffy one, Lord Waffles, and how it was Takeru's fate to oppose him. At first ignoring these ravings, as any sane person would, Takeru paid it no mind. Until meeting Waffles, and then continued to pay it no mind, for how could such a nice and charming dog be an evil mastermind? And Takeru's magic item is the Amulet of Health.
Hi, this is Zach, and I play Cynthia Von Fall. I am a life domain cleric of St. Abria, and I was blessed by St. Abria when I fought off a half-ogre by myself to save my village. And ever since, I have been trying to become strong and save people as many as I can. For the games, I wear a full plate armor, but with no sleeves because sleeves are illegal in Tesser. So I have beautiful autumn leaves worked into the intricacy of my armor. And it is beautiful, brown and orange and red colors, and a leaf-made cape made by Verity Squalls, who is my sponsor for the games. And I was bestowed by my saint the sun blade that I use to strike down my enemies. And do cool, flashy sword shit with. Because Sunblade is cool. Now, before joining the what became known as the Brunch Club, I met Blaine the Boulder on the battlefield much long time ago, where we came to blows with no weapons, and we met in a stalemate, wherein which I'm still pretty sure I won, but it was fair fight, and he was good opponent, and now he is good friend. I also happen to have sat in on some information about Waffles and their evil schemes, but they're not that evil. And I don't think they could ever possibly take over the world, so it's not a concern of mine. Plus, Waffles is cute as shit. So that is all about me. And I will become stronger and kick more ass.
The crowds are wild and tense with excitement. It is a windblown winter day, but in the city of Tesser, located in the far southern Saracen, winter is a suggestion, and the heat radiating from the tense fight has made sleeves almost illegal in the rows of the seat of the Stadium Raji. Sitting in a high private box, Queen Arumi keeps a close eye on the fighting below, praying to the saints that her first tournament does not end in disaster. Standing upon a floating disc some 50 feet above the arena, surrounded by magical zoomed-in screens, is Viridia, a woman in armor with a spear and cloak suggesting the look of stained glass. Her bright, clear voice cuts through the yelling and chanting, calling the crowd to heed her introductions. On one end of the arena, two figures emerge opposite to you, to a stellar chorus of boos and jeers, the world's most impressive amount of boos and jeers for this particular group. Viridia tries to calm the crowd, announcing the arrival of the Upside Down Groove. One man enters, bearded and smug, wearing what can best be described as a fantasy wrestling leotard, complete with nonsensical armor placement and a hood for no gosh darn reason. This man is Upside McGree, wielder of the foldable chair and a crowd-anointed villain. Walking in step with him, face twisted into a permanent rigor mortis grin, is a man who looks like the corpse of a fantasy wrestler, widely known to be one of those awakened undead you hear about in the stories your friend might use to justify not burying their dead dad. This corpse of a man is Downside McGrew. He laughs at the jeering crowd and peels off his right arm, holding it in his left to extend the reach of his triumphant wave. He brings the arm back, and it appears to magically stitch itself back into place, while the two villainous wrestlers pose and show off their impressive and/or undead biceps. Two of you now stand at the opposite entrance. Before you is a large circular arena of marble, strewn with stone pillars of odd shapes to provide terrain and verticality to the proceedings. And this is your opportunity, because this is going to be our first group, so this is going to be the boulder and Cynthia.
Oh, perfect.
So you're coming in from the opposite end, and you're facing the upside-down groove.
The boulder comes running in, hands up high, just like hoping to, like, you know, get the crowd like pumped up and excited for him, and he's flashing the peace sign and like flexing like yes let's fight these weaklings will not stand a chance.
And there's a quick pan over to the upside down groove where you see that Upside McGree has made full eye contact with you and done like the two eyes to the two eyes sort of thing with like, but yeah, he's looking at you, this Upside McGree, who is the one with the foldable chair, and he like holds up two fingers to his eyes and like points them at you like, you and I, we got beef.
Cynthia walks in behind the boulder. She's got her autumn leaf cape just flowing in the wind. Her plate armor is shimmering in cool bronzy orangish colors. Blazing green eyes are stared, fixated on Downside McGrew.
Yes, Downside McGrew. He's the zombie guy.
And she points her the hilt of her sunblade, and it extends in a cool, like... And she's like, you dead man will be dead more.
there's like a palpable like pause as Downside McGrew just like his arms like comedically just fall off, and he just like picks them both up and puts them on, but it takes a while because he has to like lean all the way over in like a yoga pose, and the arm just kind of pushes itself up and sticks on, and yeah, he gets his arms back on, but he was briefly caught off guard because he wasn't expecting a fucking lightsaber. So with that out of the way, you guys have kind of entered the arena. It's like I said, it's this big circle of marble. It's about like maybe 50 feet across. There's a bunch of weird pillars of varying heights so that you can take advantage of verticality. There is technically like a kind of banded rope, kind of like a wrestling ring around that you would be able to like kind of climb into. There are various like, I'm going to say like three or four clerics around with like spare the dying spells at the ready so that nobody gets like horribly hurt for obvious reasons. And this is a good time for me to kind of explain how this is going to work for combat, because it's a little bit different here in the Stadium Raji. The main idea is that you're not just appealing in a fight to like win, you're also trying to appeal to the crowd and work within your gimmick. So the two players are going to be using characters with more heroic style gimmicks. So they're going to appeal to the crowd and be like confident and like smiling and like doing generally like good natured type of things, but obviously still while kicking the snot out of the two villains on the opposing side. Alongside this, of course, instead of doing regular initiative, we're going to be doing a sort of like back and forth style initiative where at the beginning of every round, each character will kind of explain how they're going to appeal to the crowd and roll a performance or a relevant role. Like if they say they want to use like their athletics to do something, I'll be like, yeah, sure. But performance is generally how it's going to go down, but you can really use any stat, and that's going to set up your initiative in that turn, where basically like whichever group rolls the highest will earn the appeal of that crowd and will get to go first that round. In addition to that, the more appeal of the crowd that you have, it's kind of a sliding scale, the more damage you're going to do. The opposite is also true. If you lose the appeal of the crowd, your opponents will be dealing a lot more damage to you, which I believe I explained as, if you're at that first stage of appeal, you get 10 damage at the end of your regular round of combat. If you got very maxed out, like everyone in the crowd loves you appeal, that's going to be 20 extra damage at the end of your combat. Similarly, you will take 10 more if the opponents have the appeal, and you will take 20 more at the end of their fighting turns if your opponent has max appeal. If there's a zero, nobody has the appeal. It's just going to be flat combat until the appeal is kind of established. And that can happen with like ties, or if like everyone kind of fucks up. If like everyone fails, the crowd is unhappy in general because they want to see you do cool stuff. So with that in mind, let's do our first kind of appeal and setup as Viridia kind of announces, sponsored by this city's very own master costume maker, Verity Squall, we have two powerful opponents here to face off against some very classic villains of this arena. We have Blaine the Boulder. You all know him well, and there's like cheers. A couple people are like, yeah! In addition, we have Cynthia Von Fall, and you see even more screaming to kind of complement the Boulder screaming, because like everyone's like, this is a team to watch. You guys have been making your way up the ranks pretty quickly, especially as new arrivals. So there is a general amount of like, we like these people. So you're starting off with a generally like okay, like favorable crowd. None of you have done anything heinous, so you're not starting with like negative appeal, but negative appeal has its own quirks, which we shall see. So what are each of you going to do to appeal to the crowd?
So Blaine, showing off his just raw power, is just going to like pick up just like the nearest like handful of like stones that are like probably like on like the arena floor and just like crush them in one hand and like start flexing like and then I'll point at the head of the guy that eyeballed me earlier and point to the handful of
he gets it. He picks up what you're putting down. He's like, oh, my head is the gravel. Like, there's a silent, like, he points at his own head, he points at you, and then he, like, flicks you off. Go ahead and roll a check that would be relevant to crushing a stone and threatening somebody.
Intimidation?
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. I feel like intimidation.
Yeah, go for it.
That was a 12.
You're starting off a lot less strong. In fact, everyone like at first is like, oh my god, that's so cool. And then like you undo your hand and the rock is still kind of there. It's just got a bunch of cracks. So a bunch of the outer shell of the rock fell off. And so the crowd is like, yeah, but not like, yeah. You know what I mean?
You're like, oh, okay, yeah.
Fake rock.
Cool. So yeah, there's like excitement, but it's not like, jump, you're not going to only need the edge type of your seat excitement. It's just like, oh yeah, this is a good start. Cynthia, what are you doing to appeal to the crowd?
So Cynthia is going to summon her spiritual weapon, which I've decided looks like herself. Except
is it you but tiny?
No. It's full body. It can be any size you want. So it's her with no armor. And
Okay. She
cracks her knuckles and then they both fist bump.
Oh, nice. Yeah, the crowd loves it. They're like, we didn't know this was going to be a three on two. That's cool.
Because her body is registered as a living weapon.
And the spiritual weapon looks kind of like a force ghost. But
Cool. So you're kind of, you've given yourself a fantasy stand. I see you. Go ahead. What role would be relevant to your spiritual weapon setup and your cool fist bump with your ghost self?
I guess performance.
Okay. I'm, of course, deeply impressed.
Four.
A four? Oh, that's good. That's good. Not as exciting as it could have been. And an immediate disappointment. As you go to, like, fist bump yourself, and you see that somebody has done something. And I'm going to roll for this, so it's not just, like, an automatic, like, fuck you. Okay, so that's a 13 plus, what is their athletics? Plus 9. So that's going to be pretty high. You see that Downside has thrown his right arm and it has flown out and caught the fist bump of your ghost. And like everyone like loses their shit. They're like, oh, and then it swings your ghost like a little bit to the right. And then the hand like retracts. And you see that there is like a almost like a, where the bone would be to connect this arm to the rest of the body. Downside has like chains that connect the arm. So he's able to kind of like scorpion throw his own arm.
Oh, shit.
And it like clicks back into place and everyone like goes, oh shit. So that was Downside's roll, which was, I believe, a 23.
Oh shit.
And then following that, Upside, you see, retrieves from his back the world's only folding chair. He built it himself. He was a carpenter in his time. And he got tired of the wooden folding chairs because they kept shattering under his immense strength. So he has switched now to a metal folding chair. And the crowd loves that shit. So he takes his chair, sits down, and, like, does, like, a... He does, like, a big casual pose on the chair and, like, does, like... like he's rolling up the little the finger, like in Guardians of the Galaxy, where he's like kind of rolling up the finger to flick you guys off, and that's going to be a performance check for him. Okay, so he doesn't have great charisma. He's just kind of an asshole, which isn't really a charismatic trait. It's just a thing you do. So you only got a 13. So overall, it looks like the Upside Down Groove is going to be going before you guys, as the crowd has swung in their favor due to the fact that it was really cool when the arm flew out and stole that fist bump from yourself.
Yeah, that'll do it.
So what a... So they so obviously Upside gets up from the chair, folds it, and then like runs forward to try to lay the smack down. So for Upside, he has an ability where he basically gets to pick a target and make that his focus. So basically, and when he's chosen his focus, right, when he's picked out his opponent, he gets to deal more damage. But if he attacks somebody else, he loses some of that damage. And it's like a D4 or whatever, so it's nothing out of this world. But he has honed in on the boulder and been like, this is my focus. And he kind of does the bonus action, and like he kind of leans down and does the cool pose with the chair kind of extended behind him and just runs forward and like brings it up behind the shoulder and flings it downward. So let me go ahead and roll the attack for him. Ooh, that's not great. What's your AC, Boulder?
16.
16. All right, so 17 is just enough to hit, thankfully. You're going to be taking 2d12 points of damage as the folding chair is reinforced and durable and magical, one might even say.
Plus one folding chair.
Yeah, plus one folding chair. So that's going to be a 2d12 plus 6 sort of damage, which ends up being 17 points of damage as he brings down this folding chair on you. And then you take the additional 1d4. So adding a 3 to that, you take a full 20. And then he kind of flips the chair behind him and does like a sick move. So go ahead. What are you going to react?
I was just going to use my reaction to do Stone's Endurance, my Goliath racial feat, which allows me to reduce damage by 1d12 plus 3.
Ooh, that's good.
Yeah.
Describe kind of how you catch this chair and reduce the damage.
So that's 13 damage that I reduce it by. What I end up doing is... So Boulder has like this kind of like round stone plate for a helmet. And I just basically just lean into the hit and kind of like headbutt the chair with my armor. And so the damage that comes through is kind of like the reverberations, you know, kind of like a sonic kind of damage from like the helmet kind of getting shook around. But, just kind of deflect most of the physical damage away from me.
All right, so you reduce that damage. It does not hurt as much as it could have, and it kind of is deflected all around your big round helmet situation. And he picks up the chair again, and he's kind of like flinging it back and forth. And instead of doing his second attack, he's going to try to appeal to the crowd again. So this time, he sits down directly in front of you. He takes out the folding chair, sits down, and like kind of kicks at your shins. And everyone's like, this is weird. What's going on here? I don't get it. But he does roll a 17, so as soon as they're like, what are you doing? He, like, does a backflip off the chair and then kicks it towards you, pushing you back 10 feet. So the crowd is like, oh, shit, that's really cool. So they are one step towards getting to max appeal. Basically, you kind of have to give up an attack to try to go for appeal again. And if both of your team members can get that appeal during your turn, you can go up to max appeal, and that's an extra 20 damage. So right now... even though you reduce some of that damage, at the end of their turn, you're going to take an extra 10. Meanwhile, Downside, who has been kind of clicking his arms into place, sets one of his arms to just spin around, kind of like a buzzsaw. It's like his arm is just like helicoptering on one side, and he moves his arm behind him, and you see that he's using the helicopter arm to kind of propel him forwards. He just runs by way faster than you think you would be able to, and he's just going to fling out his arm at you. So he's not even that close to you. He's maybe about 20 feet away as his arm flies towards Cynthia. And that's a nat 20, folks. With a nat 20, you are, one, grappled, Cynthia, so you're not unable to move as the arm kind of swings past you and then, like, immediately does a weird ricochet and, like, curls and wraps around you as you're now grappled with this chain. And you just have an arm kind of, like, doing the stop hitting yourself thing because now there's an arm kind of attached to you that's punching you.
Oh, God.
You take 2d6 plus 6 damage, and that's just going to be 11 damage. So you're restrained, you're getting all these punches, And it looks like right now, like, that arm is now occupied because it's being used to grapple one person. So that's going to be Downside's turn. And he doesn't talk much. He just kind of makes, like, the zombie growls. So as he, like, starts walking, like, once he's done his cool helicopter thing to get close and fling his arm, he slows down to a full zombie crawl. His arm starts spinning, and he starts going, with, like, one arm outstretched walking towards you. And because he didn't use his turn to appeal, that extra appeal is lost. So it's just the usual appeal. You each take an extra 10 points of damage. It is your turn.
Oof. Okay. So 10 damage.
So we take the damage right now.
If one of you was hit by both of them, you would each take, or you, the one who was hit would take the 10 for each. Same works the other way around. If you both focus one person and you have appeal, etc. All right. So what are you guys up to?
Blaine, you may go first.
Okay. You sure?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I am going to. So if I attack twice per turn, if I give up one of my attacks, I can try and get the appeal of the crowd.
Yes.
Okay.
What I'm going to change that, where before it's like if both of you try to get appeal, you can win it that turn. If only one of you does the appeal thing, then basically at the beginning of the next round, you can roll with advantage for your appeal check to go first.
Oh, cool.
Okay. Cool.
So, yeah.
Awesome. So I'm going to run up to Upside, and I am going to just start wailing on him with my fists.
Hell yeah.
So I will roll both attacks real quick. 16 to hit.
Yeah. So I'm going to say for Upside, yeah, you definitely hit him.
Cool. And that's 10 bludgeoning damage.
Nice.
And I have this special feature for my fighting style called Crusher, where once per turn, when I deal bludgeoning damage, I can move the target 5 feet to an unoccupied space.
Okay.
So I just hit this guy with such force that he basically just gets pushed back 5 feet. And
yeah.
I'll use that and kind of like triumphantly pose, like, you know, showing off the biceps to the crowd as I'll use my second attack to gain the appeal of the crowd.
Absolutely. I will do you one better. He's sitting on his chair, right? You punch him off of the folding chair. And then once you do that, you literally like put your right foot on the chair to like boost yourself up to hold out your fist and like get the crowd's appeal.
Yeah.
So he's currently without access to his chair.
Ooh.
So yeah, you can go ahead and roll appeal for me. I'm going to say this can be an athletics. Ooh. Easily.
Oh, it's a nat 20.
Hell yeah. I'm not even gonna have to bother with the advantage. I'm gonna say next turn you win the appeal.
Awesome.
So it will go back to a zero rather than the you take extra 10 damage. You're good. But if Cynthia also does well in the appeal, it might go up more.
Cool.
So the crowd is very much like gone from like, oh, these villains are gonna crush them to like, oh, that was really cool. We're on your side now.
Cool, because I got a cool plan.
All right.
And I think I'll save that for another turn. So I give up my second attack. Got no other things to do. So then, yeah, I'll end my turn.
Cool. Sounds good. Cynthia, it's your turn.
So Cynthia, grappled by this dismembered arm.
Yeah.
Is first going to have her Force Ghost run up and punch him square in the face.
Hell yeah.
For a 24 to hit.
Yeah, 24 definitely hits Downside.
10 force damage. As Force Cynthia just comes up and just full-on wallops right across the jaw, probably dislocating it.
Oh, yeah. So, like, it's definitely the undead thing of, like, the jaw just, like, goes way off to the right.
Yeah.
And he takes it and he, like, pushes it back in and he looks kind of embarrassed.
And then she is going to, instead of using a second attack, she's going to Misty Step out of the grapple.
Oh, sick. I love it. So you see the autumn cloak that was given to you by Verity Squall, this town's leading costume maker and retired witch, has come in great use today as you use it to poof and disappear out of the grasp of the chain, which kind of rattles to the ground and the arm just kind of flops around like a fish. And you see as you use it, the autumn leaves of the cloak kind of start to dry out a little bit. You probably have two more uses of this cloak.
Got it. And she's going to reappear right behind downside McGrew and have her sword. She's going to like swing her sword to his neck, but stop. And then look to the crowd and be like, should I do it?
I will say, because the boulder has already done, laid up some groundwork to like give you some appeal. The crowd is like, hell yeah! Like, everyone's like, whoa, that's awesome! Because they've never seen a glowing sword before. This is new to them. Well, they've seen you fight before, but like they haven't seen it against these people, and they're like, oh, that's cool. So yeah, the crowd is giving you a thumbs up. An enthusiastic thumbs up.
Then I shall follow through, I guess. So it'll be an 18 to hit.
Okay, that definitely hits.
For an 11 radiant damage.
Ooh, cool.
She has her hands up in the air, and as the crowd goes, yeah, she like brings it straight down and like a cross section across his body.
Oh yeah, so being that he's like a basically like a Frankenstein monster with scorpion from Mortal Kombat arms, the gash just goes through, and now there's just kind of like a gash in his chest, but there's no blood coming out or anything. He just kind of looks down like, yeah, he can't talk. If he could, he'd probably say something like, oh man, I have to get that stitched up now. That's so bad.
That was rude.
That's the voice I gave him for his internal monologue. He sounds like a like a sad, polite man. All right. So I'm going to say, Blaine the Boulder, you do not have to roll for appeal. You have already won with your nat 20. Cynthia, roll for appeal. And how are you going to do it?
Let's see. I'm trying to make use of the skills that I put ranks in, but I don't know what... how to use them.
You can do the... I'm going to say if you want to do sleight of hand, you can do the thing that Darth Maul does where he like spins it around super fast.
I got a +1 in sleight of hand. Let's do that.
Yeah, sure.
For 19.
You just do like a full set of like those like YouTube videos of people who have like sat there and like figured out lightsaber tricks for like way too much time. So you do like a full like maybe like minute like display of that, and everyone is just in awe. Like the fight just stops for 2 seconds. And yeah, so now the appeal has shifted back to neutral. So you're now each going to do normal damage to each other. Meanwhile, as you kind of set up the appeal, let me go ahead and roll for my boys, my villainous boys. So you see Upside runs forward and pushes you off the chair, Blaine, and takes it back, and then stands up on it and does a bow as he rolls a 19 for athletics. And then following that, Downside, who's been thoroughly embarrassed, just like tries to do like a thing where he like reattaches both of his arms and then like sets them to spin to get the crowd excited, but it kind of gets caught on like some of the thing, like on I think somebody's leg, probably the Force Ghost. Like it gets caught on the Force Ghost. It's really awkward as he only rolls a 12 and is unfortunately not a little embarrassed about it. So I think overall the appeal stays at 0 as the nat 20 and the 19 were higher than theirs. So you've managed to push the appeal back towards your end. Before we move on with this next round of combat, we kind of zoom out of the arena and towards the stands, where the other members of this particular fighting group have arrayed themselves. And the three of you have been watching the fight, but with any kind of fight like this, there's always crazy fans, there's always people who have bets riding on the outcome, and there's people that are going to try to either mess with it, or maybe you're going to be the one who tries to mess with it. So we pan over to the three of you. What are you all doing during this fight?
Takeru is loudly and gladly stuffing his face.
Nice. He has received a novelty Stadium Raji meat tube, which is a fantasy hot dog. And there's just a pile in the chair next to him.
He couldn't be happier. He's only paying slightest attention to the fight.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anyone else?
Yeah. Oh, you go first.
No, you go for it.
No, it's okay.
Okay. So can I assume with the Queen's Festival as my sponsor that I have some leverage when it comes to getting free drinks at these events?
Absolutely. So for those of you who are not in the know, which why would you be? This is all made up for my brain. The Queen's Festival, like Verity Squall the Witch, is one of the sponsors for the fights in these in the city of Tesser. And the Queen's Festival is literally the party sponsor. Their deal is getting people drinks, getting people happy. It is based around the fact that the Queen, Arumi, used to be a huge party animal when she was a princess. But then some rough stuff that I've already explained in the intro with the whole Night of Cruelty happened, and she had to kind of grow up really fast. So the Queen's Festival is kind of like trying to keep her like party spirit alive, even as she has to go to be responsible and be an actual queen. So yeah, you're able to pretty easily get drinks for your crew, for the people in the stands, like in your section. It's not hard.
Yeah. So Dirk's just kind of, Dirk blends in with the common man here real well. So what he's doing is just kind of going from like little click to click, sitting in the stands, watching the event, getting them free drinks, hyping them up, talking about Blaine and Cynthia, you know, doing party tricks. He's doing backflips. He's doing card tricks and shit like that.
All right. Both Blaine and Cynthia. Actually, roll me. It's like I don't want to say. Let's do persuasion. Like, roll me a persuasion check with advantage because you're coming in with free drinks.
Okay.
And nothing persuades people like free alcohol.
So it's going to be an 18.
Ooh, I like that. So one thing that happens is as you've kind of been hyping everybody up and handing out the free drinks, Blaine and Cynthia, I told you before that the appeal was up to neutral, so you weren't damaging each other normally. But there's a sudden eruption of three or four sections of the stands that are way more drunk than they used to be, and your appeal has risen to you each dealing an extra 10 damage at the end of your round.
Hell yeah.
All right. So, Waffles, what are you up to?
So Waffles low-key does not want to be here. He thinks it's stupid and that humans are just impulsive creatures that are just doing dumb shit. So personally, Waffles does not want to be there. But if he's just kind of like cross arm, kind of looking around. But if he does notice that someone is watching him, he will play it up for the crowd and look like he's very excited and happy to be there. But deep down inside, he's not.
Roll deception for me.
Okay. I got a 20.
Ooh, nice. So with a 20, most people think that you're very excited. And how does Waffles like travel around? Do you have like a certain like outfit or deal that you have that kind of separates you from the common canine?
Yeah, so Waffles doesn't walk on all fours. Waffles walks on their hind legs, and I guess they are technically wearing a Displacer Beast onesie type of thing.
That's precious.
So yeah, I like to think people know who Waffles is because, like I said, is that Waffles is kind of like the mascot for
that's probably something Waffles isn't too keen on, but like the label has stuck of like the group's mascot being like the dog that walks on two legs and wears different themed onesies.
Right.
Waffles has the sponsor of the menagerie, where basically they sell, collect, and breed rare animals. So Waffles is able to gain sort of like boons related to the skills that certain magical animals might have. And that explains the onesie.
Yeah. Like he doesn't want to be the mascot, but there's a bigger picture involved.
Yeah, it's very much a Meowth, that's right situation.
Yeah.
All right. So the three of you are at your respective spots doing your thing, playing it up for the crowd, eating hot dogs, sharing drinks. Meat tubes. I have to say it for logistic and legal reasons. It has to be meat tubes. And then, so you're doing that, and I want all three of you to roll me perception.
Okay.
15 for Dirk.
Ooh, okay.
21.
Mm.
21.
Mm, okay, so you spot what appears to be a like lizard folk, like a very, very large lizard folk. All three of you, you all rolled high enough. There's a very large lizard folk, and then sitting kind of on his shoulder or like kind of clambering on him. It's sort of like they're clearly like a team situation. The bigger one is holding a giant stew pot. And then the little one has a big spoon and he's like handing out the food and everything, to like little bowls of soup to people. And most people that are having the soup look to be a little like their eyes kind of glaze over a little bit. And then they all start cheering for the Upside Down Groove. And this lizard folk duo is giving out soup, and it seems to be affecting people's minds.
Can Dirk do a thing here?
Yeah, sure.
So Dirk's gonna look at them, and he's gonna yell, "Hey!"
The little one turns around. His name is Glim, and he's like, "What do you want?"
Dirk's wearing a shirt with the sleeves cut off because it's hot out. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, the sleeves are illegal in Tesser, so it is what it is.
And he's just going to rip the remainder of the shirt off to reveal his average middle-aged man body. And he's going to say,
"You and me right now, brother. Let's go."
Go and roll intimidation with advantage because nobody saw this coming.
Jeez, 7.
Oh, man.
So, no! Glim.
Wait, did you roll with advantage?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, did you roll with
advantage? 2 7s.
Oh, that's deeply disappointing. So, Glim looks at you and he's like, "Yeah? You want to fucking go?" He turns around and the giant lizard folk that he's kind of like on the shoulder of also turns and he moves with this massive soup cauldron and he like smashes by a couple of people that just like duck out of their seats because they won't be able to like fit in the same space as a large cauldron and a giant lizard folk. And Glim just like takes a giant spoon off of his back, and the bigger one is named Glob for posterity. It's Glim and Glob. Okay. And the little one, Glim, takes a big spoon and like flings this like boiling soup at you, and you're now shirtless. So you just get hit by like really hot soup and you take like 4 points of fire damage.
So I'm going to use my deflect missiles ability.
Oh my God. So it's still going to hurt your hands, but you are able to like, as the soup flies towards you, grab it and like hold it in your hands because
like
it's like
to
a
throw
chunky
it right
soup.
Back at him.
Yeah, it's solid. It's chunky soup. Go ahead and roll an attack.
How's a 22?
Oh, that's great. So you hold the soup and you like twist it behind your head and this like you turned your hands into a cup of sorts and just flung the soup back with like, it looks like you did it by accident, and that's kind of by design being a drunken monk. Like it looks like you accidentally grabbed the soup and flung it back. And it hits Glim and Glob right in the face, and Glob just like does the cartoon Scooby-Doo thing where he like his tongue is like way longer than it should be, and it just like slurps all of the soup up, and he's like, "Ah, delicious." But Glim is like wearing like this kind of festive, like sort of like hood and jester's robe situation, so he like wipes it off and he looks really mad. And he gives you a look, is like, "That's what I thought." They turn around, and it appears that you have stopped them from serving soup in this region. You have just met another group that is part of the same group as the Upside Down Groove, which is kind of colloquially just called like the Villain Squad. But this is Glim and Glob, and their team name is a thing I wrote down that I forgot. It's called the Chef's Reptile. So Glim can shape and conjure stew. And Glob can carry the stew and is giant and could smash people with the cauldron. So we'll see if they play a role kind of further along as they kind of head off to another section. But you are able to stop them from using their soup to apparently like do some light brainwashing to gain crowd appeal.
And then going forward after this, I want to go back to the people that they've been serving soup to, and I want to start buying those people drinks and getting them hyped up for Blaine and Cynthia.
Oh, absolutely. They love it. They're excited. They're having a good time. All right. Is anyone in the stands want to do anything else to kind of help out the situation? I know Takeru's deep into eating those meat tubes, but what do you want to do?
Just after everything's resolved. And be like, "I heard there was free soup around here."
"You don't want none of that soup, brother."
And then he's going to look sad and dejected. Be like, "All right, well, I guess meat tubes are enough."
And we kind of hard cut. And I feel like Takeru and Glob have definitely like been on opposite ends of eating contests before. And there's like a camaraderie there. Like, you know that Glob is kind of like, he's chill, but he is being led around by Glim, who is like kind of a villainous little lizard man.
Yeah, a little big guy needs to learn to stand up for himself.
Yeah. So we hard cut back to the match where Blaine and Cynthia are going to be leading the charge, this time with more crowd appeal than they started at a plus 10 to their damage.
Cynthia, do you want to go first this time since I took first last time?
I'm reading over my stuff right now, so you can go ahead and go.
Okay, no, that's fine. Okay, I just didn't want to hog all the fun.
Yeah, you're good.
Yeah, so real quick, Ian, could you remind me where Upside is in relation to me?
Upside is maybe about 10 feet away from you. He pushed you off of the chair, and he is now, like, caressing the chair lovingly, as the chair is one of his friends. He built it with his bare hands. He's a carpenter, remember? Like, he has a deep, rich backstory.
Yeah. Bare hands are called paws.
Ah, you're right. He built it with his paws.
Excellent.
His punch paws, if you will.
Excellent. Well, then I think, now that he's got some of the appeal of the crowd going, I think Blaine the Boulder, Stevenson, is going to bust out his signature move, Boulder Dash.
Oh, that's good.
So basically, what Blaine does is Blaine is going to run towards Upside. And just before he gets the... It looks like he's going to just straight up, like, punch him in the face. But, like, just before he gets within reach, he'll jump into the air. And the way Blaine's armor is designed is that it's designed to basically almost make him a living cannonball. So he jumps into the air, he curls his body in, and he just basically is going to drop headfirst onto the head of Upside.
Oh, nice. Go ahead and roll for it.
I'm assuming that's going to be an unarmed strike.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Basically my whole shtick here.
Whole shtick.
No, I'm digging it. Like, the crowd loses it as you go full Morphall with your 12-foot vertical leap. And everyone's, like, fucking losing their minds. They're like, oh, shit. It's going to be an RKO out of nowhere sort of situation. So everyone's ready to, like, cheer when you drop.
And it's a 27 to hit.
Oh, yeah, you absolutely hit. Yeah, you slam down on Upside, who hasn't much been talking, more so, like, hitting you with chairs and flicking you off. And you finally hear him just go, oh, shit, that hurt a fuck ton, as you slam onto him. And, yeah, no, you deal your damage to Upside, who is, you know, being crushed by a cannonball person.
Well, sadly, that's only 7 damage, but...
The crowd still is excited and loves it, and he takes the full 7.
And then I'll basically just kind of, like, roll away from him, stand up, and I will take my second attack to then basically just kind of try to, like, uppercut him.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, that's only a 12 to hit.
A 12, unfortunately, is going to miss, as with a quick dodge to the right, Upside is able to avoid your uppercut. But he does still take an extra 10 points of damage because you have the lead in appeal.
And I think that'll do it for Blaine's turn.
All right. So, Cynthia, what's up? What's going on? You seem to have thoroughly embarrassed Downside. Which he doesn't understand because he's an undead, but you know.
So I'm going to put a bigger twist on this here, and I'm going to pull out my holy symbol of, you said the saints were the way to go, not the primals, right?
Yeah, in this setting there are saints and primals. Saints are the more, like, intelligent species aligned deities. Primals are more like, if you want to, you know, worship deities that don't actually give a shit about people's lives or deaths, and are more kind of interested in fighting each other and accruing power. Oh, so most people go for saints.
Got it. So I present the symbol of Saint Abria, and...
Excelsior, dear reader, Saint Abria is the saint of life.
And I wish to instill fear into this undead as I turn undead, so I need a wisdom save, DC 14.
Oh, that's awesome. I something I totally forgot and did not expect. I love that. Yeah, no, he fails. Downside is, like, terrified of you. You, like, hold up your holy symbol and, like, a bunch of, like, beams of light just shine from it. And Downside, who goes from a normal, like, kind of Frankenstein, like, smile that he can't get rid of, the smile just, like, twists upside down. And the arms stop spinning, like they're no longer doing the little helicopter thing. And he's just kind of covering his eyes. He doesn't want to see it.
So this only lasts for a minute or until he takes damage, but I just want the crowd to see him in utter terror.
Oh yeah, the crowd hates that.
When he turns to run away from me, I want the Force Ghost who's behind him to clothesline him.
Hell yeah! Go ahead and roll the attack for that now. So we deal with it later.
Oh, that's perfect.
For a 17.
Yeah, and I was going to say you do get advantage because he is terrified. Yeah, you totally hit. Go ahead and roll your damage as Downside is going to get clotheslined and toppled over by your Force Ghost.
For 7 force damage.
Alright, so with that as your turn, Upside and Downside look to be kind of like, you know, it's not as good. The fight's not going as well for them as they thought it was going to, and they're really mad about it. So they look over to each other, and Downside is terrified, but will at least attempt to do the combo strike that they have prepared for each other. So you see Upside runs over and sets down the chair, and Downside steps on it, still avoiding Cynthia's gaze because he's terrified. And he basically, Upside runs up onto the chair into Downside's arms, and then Downside just like shoots him out with his arm still attached towards Blaine, the boulder. Sorry, God, the fiction is getting to me. Blaine the boulder. So you see this like high speed Upside just flying at you with his now decided upon Scottish accent that I definitely won't forget in the future, as suddenly the arms holding him and shooting him outward separate, and it's like you're being attacked by four arms, as Upside Down does their pivotal Upside Down ham sandwich.
I know this is a bonus action, not a reaction, but can I do a thing for Blaine?
Yeah, sure.
I wish to cast Shield of Faith on Blaine.
Ooh, cool. I'm going to say it's cool and I like it, and I don't always follow the rules. You shouldn't either. I will accept no comments about me not doing the rules right because I made up an initiative for this game.
Perfect.
Blaine, you're harder to hit. You get a cool, like, what does it look like? What does your Shield of Faith look like?
A mist of leaves kind of surround him and make him a little harder to hit.
Ooh, that's cool. I like it. So you get this cool particle effect situation.
Yeah, and he gets +2 to his AC.
Awesome. So Blaine, what is your AC as you're about to take 4 attacks from Upside?
18 is my AC.
18. All right, so these might miss. So you're going to have 2 misses because they have disadvantage from being Downside's arms. And then you're going to have a nat 20 for one, and that's still going to hit as well. So you're going to get 2 attacks that hit for the Upside Down ham sandwich, and 2 that miss. And you're going to take, I'm going to say because it's all fists, you're going to take this much damage, one of them's a crit. So at the end of the day, the math equals, you take 31 points of damage.
Oh, damn.
As they use their sick combo move to deliver like a rain of fists and punches, and you manage to block some of them, and the leaves manage to block some other ones, but they just slip past your defenses. They've practiced this for years. They know exactly what they're doing. As 4 fists sort of recede, and now it's just Upside. His chair is over where Downside is, who is now, he's doing like the youth counselor, like church leader, like pose, where he's sitting on the chair incorrectly and he's facing away from Cynthia. Uh-huh. So the chair is facing Cynthia. He is facing away from Cynthia, sitting in the chair incorrectly. That is what Downside is doing. Upside is back and like kind of still facing up to, and also the additional focus damage. Take 5 more damage, Boulder. And the Upside is facing you and he looks exhausted. Like this move always takes a toll on his body. They're not getting any younger, but he's like, grinning because it's like, this is a good fight. I'm going to kick your ass. All right. So what is everyone doing for their appeal?
So Blaine, having just taken that hit, is going to do kind of that like dramatic anime thing where like they put their head down and they're looking all serious. And then he's just going to slowly look up at the 2 clowns that just hit him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's just going to like wipe like some like blood off his face and then just start grinning and laughing. Like, yes, now we're serious.
Oh, they love it. They love it. They are delighted. The crowd is like, oh, that's great. He's laughing, so I feel at ease.
And I'm assuming that would be a performance.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, that's not bad. It's a 16.
Ooh, okay. Yeah, that's pretty good. What are your health totals at, actually, out of curiosity?
I am at 46.
Holy shit. I'm at 33.
Cool.
You have a lot more health than me, though.
Yeah. Fighter, baby.
Yeah. I will say, my math brain worked out, and this fight is actually pretty even, so I'm digging it. So 16, Cynthia, what are you doing for your appeal? Ooh, go for it.
Yeah, let's do it. So as the tech finishes and I see Blaine start laughing, I get a boost of self-confidence and I take away the leaves surrounding Blaine kind of dissipate. And they transfer over into an unoccupied space near downside, and a large figure just kind of spawns behind him.
Oh,
I'm summoning Guardian of Faith.
Oh, cool! I like that. And so that's gonna take into some of your turn on the next round, because it's a pretty big spell. It's not like a bonus action.
Yes.
So your turn will consist of that, but you do get the style points from doing it behind him, which he's already terrified. And then suddenly there's this, what does your Guardian of Faith look like?
So it says it's an indistinct guardian, but I want it to look more like me. I want it to look exactly like me, but bigger.
Oh, I love it.
Plate. With the lightsaber sword, or legal reasons, sunblade.
Yeah, of course. It's like how I have to say meat tubes.
And the shield embroidered with the symbol of Saint Abria.
Yeah, so you have one force ghost of yourself. It's kind of like a pale yellow autumn leaf sort of color, and that's been doing some punches and kicks, and then you have this cool new giant ghost version of yourself that, like, the bottom half sort of fades into like a ghostly, like, mist obscurity, but it's like the brilliant orange, like, ghost version of you that has shown up. And being an undead, you know, Downside would be used to ghosts and shit, but he's not used to these ghosts, so he is freaking out. He automatically fails his appeal roll this turn,
and then on his next turn he needs to make a dex save or take 20 radiant damage.
He absolutely will have to do that. All right, so as that kind of goes through, you see Upside is the only one who's actually feasibly able to do an appeal move. And, ooh, that's not great. He rolls. He tries to run over and, like, pick up Downside from his chair and, like, set him up and, like, slap him in the face dramatically to be like, snap out of it. But instead, he just kind of, like, hoists Downside onto his shoulder and picks up his chair and just starts running to the other side of the arena to put some distance. So he is going to make a dex save to see if he gets hit by the Spirit Guardian. So you hear like the Three Stooges music as he like runs off to the other side of the arena holding his chair and his zombie buddy in each hand. What does he have to beat for the dex save?
14.
Dex is plus 4. He does beat it, so he takes half damage. But you guys just won appeal again. So that means at the end of this turn, you deal 20 damage extra. And Upside is looking kind of weak right now. But he does set down Downside, and they're both, like, they're on the other side of the arena looking very worried as you guys get to go first.
I finish summoning my guardian. As they're running, Force Ghost Cynthia is going to appear in front of them and do another freaking uppercut on... I guess Upside, since he's carrying Downside, right?
Yes.
How's a 24 to hit?
Yeah, you're good. You're excellent. You absolutely uppercut Upside, and his beard almost flies off as your Force Ghost just kind of like clocks him real good in the jaw, and he drops Downside and his chair, and he's like decked. Go ahead and roll your damage.
For 7 force damage.
Ooh, okay, perfect. Plus the extra 20 at the end. He's not looking so good. All right, so next is Blaine.
Thank you, Zach. I needed him to drop his chair.
Oh, sweet.
That's great.
Blaine is going to run over.
Mm-hmm.
and pick up the chair.
Yeah.
And then he's going to look up at the crowd for a moment. And then he's just going to say, you ready?
And the crowd leans in and looks at you with like anticipation.
And I'm going to bring it down on, on him.
Okay, go ahead and roll your unarmed. Well, I guess it would be an improvised weapon. Whatever you want to figure this out. But you are using this magical folding chair, which is a plus one folding chair. It was a joke before. It's canon now.
Yeah, don't you have advantage with improvised weapons? Or proficiency? Yep,
you do now. If you didn't, you do now. I don't care. This is very cool.
Well, with advantage, that'll be a 23 to hit upside.
Yeah, you for sure hit. For this chair, it is, I believe, it's 2d12 in his hands. You're not, but you are used to using improvised weapons, so it would be 2d12 in your hands, too.
Plus strength or dex?
It would be plus strength.
Okay.
But I will tell you this right now, it won't matter.
Well, that's 15 plus 5, that's 20 damage.
Upside is on the ground. You pick up his chair. And you wait and you look at the crowd and it's like, do I give it to him? And the crowd is like, and then you slam the chair down and Upside makes a noise somewhere between a gurgle and a croak as he like kind of does the thing where his body like flings forward for 2 seconds and his eyes just kind of glaze over and he's out fucking cold. One of the clerics in the corners of the arena goes over, does a quick Spare the Dying on him, and as soon as he goes down,
as the three count,
the three count is the 6 seconds it takes to cast Spare the Dying on somebody. If they can get up before the Spare the Dying is cast, they're fine. But you see the cleric come up and it's like 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, and Upside is out, and you see Downside, and he looks at you, and he looks at the three Cynthias, and he is terrified. So he does a thing that he's never done before, and instead of extending his arms, he just extends his legs and like leaps out of the arena, and it's already a ring out, and he just runs out of the stadium through the crowd with way longer legs than he should have because of his new extendo chain legs, his torso just flailing in the wind, and he disappears. Viridia holds up her spear, catching the sunlight, casting a glow of stained glass, different light, like rainbow lighting sources all over the two of you, as she pronounces you the winners of today's bout, and the crowd goes fucking wild.
Excellent. And then I'll just very politely give the chair back to, I'll just lay it next to Upside's crumpled body.
Yeah, no, he's not looking good.
Put him in the king pose with it on his chest like a sword.
Yeah, there you go. Like Boromir going down the river.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the magical screens that were zooming in on the fight to get those juicy reaction shots now are displaying the sponsors that you each have. So for you two, it would be Verity Squall's costume shop. So you get like a big fancy stylized V made of like gold ink just kind of scrawling across the screen, and you have won this match and gained some points for your team.
Can I do a quick like role play thing as the match is ending here? You guys hear an especially loud eruption from a section of like, I don't know, like 30, 40 people as Dirk and all these people raise a glass up and start chugging for you.
Awesome. Yeah. So there's a whole, you leave with an entourage of people, like hangers on that like enjoy the free alcohol. As those of you who were in the fight kind of head over to the locker room to discuss and plan, the rest of your team will be there shortly, but you do have like a little bit to like talk between the two of you first.
Cynthia and the boulder do a super awesome specialized fist bump kind of scenario.
I'll just say, you know, that that was almost as fun as that fight we had when we met. Oh, good times, good times. You you really gave him a good walloping out there.
It was pretty damn good. We kick a lot of ass.
Yes, we did. I, you know, the multiple U's all over the the arena. That's some really really good crowd control.
You like that? I try out first time.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's great. Yeah. You should do that more often for sure. For sure.
And before, really quick before the rest of the team shows up, you hear a rustle, like a suspicious rustle in the locker room as your guys are arriving and like getting your stuff and changing out of your combat gear and into your like everyday clothes. You hear a rustle as a fully like dressed Victorian butler elf with eyes that look to be kind of glazed over just kind of steps forward, and he's holding a tray. And it has little snails on it with like a little dusting of salt on them. But snails are dead. These are food snails. And the butler steps forward to the two of you and just kind of bows and goes, "Hors d'oeuvres." And you hear like, as he's talking, there's like almost like a, like something is breaking inside of him as he talks.
I'd like to do an insight check.
Yeah, sure.
Let's see what's up with that. 24.
You look at this butler and you're like, what? And that's the first reaction. And then the second reaction is like, you've seen this dude before. He is one of the contenders in the villain squad. A recent duo that has joined them that go by the name Voice of Horror. It is usually this butler, which looks a little bit different each time he's seen. Like, he looks to be progressively worse and more sick every time he's on the field to fight. But usually his partner is the one who carries the weight in the fight. And her name is Sindri, and she's a pale elf. And like, she doesn't have combat clothes. She literally just dresses in like a completely black, like going out on the town dress. And she has very like neatly curled, bob sort of like white hair, and her eyes, you've never seen her blink that you know of. And she's just kind of a weirdo. But most of the people that end up in the villain squad are weirdos, so it is what it is. But the butler is offering you hors d'oeuvres as a flash of white hair pokes around the corner. And with your high insight, you can tell this butler, he's definitely sick. Like, there's something wrong with him. Like, his body's, like, moving very slowly. His joints are creaking. Like, he's not doing good.
I'm going to set a hand on his shoulder and say, "No, thank you," and cast Lesser Restoration on him.
You hear a small scream erupt from the inside of his throat, and then he appears to stand up a little bit straighter. As the woman with the like the nicely curled bob kind of pokes her head out, and this is Sindri, this is the elf I was talking about, and she's like, "What are you doing to my help?"
"I am fixing him."
"Oh no, that was by design. He's such a good fighter, you see, and you've seen the butler fight. The butler's not a good fighter."
Blaine will just kind of politely put his hand up to the plate and just be like, "Sorry, but I don't eat anything that I didn't personally kill." That's not true, by the way.
That's not true.
So roll deception.
Oh shit. Oh wait, no, that's a 7. Okay, never mind. I thought it was a 1. That's a 10. So 10 total.
Yeah, so, like, the butler believes you, but Sindri doesn't, and she doesn't seem to care. And she kind of taps on the butler's shoulder, and the butler's like, "Oh, of course, madame," and turns around. She's like, "I'll see you in the battlefield. I'm very excited. My butler project is almost complete." And she wanders off and crosses by the rest of your group as they arrive in the locker rooms. And you all see Sindri and her butler, and she gives you, like, a little, like, flirtatious wave to all of you, and then tries to pet Waffles, and then sees Waffles' eyes and decides against it and keeps walking.
"I don't know about you, but she kind of cute.
In a undead puppet master kind of way, sure. But, you know, don't go getting crushes on people that you need to crush with your fist."
"Well, not worry."
I think Harry's going to walk up to them as he enters the locker room here and be like, "Ah, excellent bout, friends. Fantastic. Although I did miss a bit here and there through the ketchup, but from what I saw, well done."
"Yes, I had them right where I wanted them the entire time. It was quite an event."
The dead man was quite funny.
"Yes."
So as Dirk enters the locker room, the smell of booze sort of fills the air, And he comes in and he's got just in his arms, you're not sure how he managed to get in here without spilling, but he's got like 7 pints of ale on him.
Oh, man.
And he sets him down on a bench. He's like, drink up, everyone. We got to celebrate.
Yeah, it's liquid bread. Pass one over.
Waffles is going to look over at Dirk and just be like, I do not drink, you stupid human.
Ha, little squirrel funny.
It's going to ruffle the fur on the top of your head and go, more for me, brother.
Waffle's just going to glare at Dirk.
And Dirk's going to begin double-fisting ales.
Dirk, you rascal, you brought to the good stuff today. Excellent, excellent. Yes, I'll raise a glass. Do you know who you are fighting?
So, for context, this was the last fight of the day. But tomorrow there will be a fight. Usually it's one major fight every single day in the days leading up to the Battle Royale. So you do get a chance to basically party, talk to your sponsors, buy stuff, reach out to other fighters or NPCs. This is some time for you all to kind of like interact with each other and with the world. Oh, cool. The city of Tesser is fairly open-ended. There's lots of places you can go. There's a restaurant district that is Takeru's sponsor. They are called, I believe, it's not Frendo's.
It's
Frytan's, yeah. There's the Frytan kind of restaurant group. There's also go look at the Menagerie, which is Rancho's Menagerie. That's the sponsor for Waffles. Or you can go to Verity's costume shop, see if she can fix any of your costumes or add new flair to it. You did just win a match, so she might want to see you. But it's up to you if you want to go see her. And then, of course, if you're part of the Queen's Festival, anywhere you go, you can turn into a party pretty easily. So usually a good way to wind down a night of fighting in the tournament is a party that people will partake in.
Nice. I will definitely want to go see Verity.
Okay, so I'll mark that down. Does anyone else want to party, go to their sponsor, talk to any of the other fighters? You can just let me know. You guys are your own kind of squad, but there is an existing kind of like, they're called the Paragons. They're like an existing group of fighters that has already been on the island before you guys arrived. And if you want to talk to any of them, they're usually friendlier than the villain squad. But like I've kind of mentioned with Takeru, some of you already know the villain squad people, and some of them are chill.
Just not when they have to turn on the...
They're just people like you and me.
Yeah, just when they have to turn on the villain persona is when they are jerks.
Yeah, yeah. It's very much like the idea of kayfabe. Like, most of these people are your coworkers, but there is an obvious, like, you want to be able to defeat them. Because the way the old tournament was structured, there was basically two teams. There was one squad that was basically 4 people that were the champion team, and they defended the champion, who was this immortal, unkillable, super halfling fighter. But she went missing, and a lot of the main 4 kind of like went off to do other stuff. So that spot of like the championship team is open, and this is what this tournament is all about.
Well, Blaine, his most important goal is to become famous. So he's not going to be too worried about visiting Verity right away. He is instead going to follow Dirk, because where Dirk goes, the party goes. And where there's a party, there's people to impress and to spread his fame.
All right.
And where there's a party, there's plenty of free food.
Absolutely. Frytan's and Queen's Festival, they're tight. They're buds.
Waffles will probably follow, because low key gonna try scouting some other animal people, see if there's anyone. Even though
there are, you've met a few.
Yeah, gotta build my little animal takeover. So yeah, Waffles will come with.
So Waffles, as you leave, and actually as the rest of the group leaves, you see like kind of like the employee board of like the next fight that's been scheduled, and you see that your group, and obviously your team for this one is going to be Takeru, Waffles, and Dirk, is going to up against a group known as Nature's Curse. And one of the members of Nature's Cursed is a talking animal person. But I will reveal what they look like and what his deal is when the fight starts. But just know that you are familiar with this person.
Okay.
Because I do have a fun reveal for him. So he will appear later on during your fight. But for now, just know that you are familiar with Nature's Curse. And you're mm-hmm. like, I know the people in that team. But yeah, you know who you're fighting against tomorrow. And you're shepherded out onto the streets. I'd say it'll probably be Verity's and then wherever the party goes. Mm-hmm. So you walk through the streets of Tesser, which I will have likely kind of like described in a fancy way in something that will appear before this. But just to give you the visual once more, it is a coastal city. It is part of a chain of two islands. One island is very much like a nature preserve island where all of the Rancho's menagerie monsters are bred and kept and stored. But the other island is a lot more like kind of like a city center and a lot more farmland and things like that. And that's the island that Tesser, the city, is on. It is built very much like a Mediterranean style, like Santorini type thing. But because of the influx of animals and parties, it's not whitewashed. And because it would be kind of untenable and it would very quickly go from whitewashed stone to very ugly, like messed up stone. So instead, it's almost like a pale-ish yellow color that seems to suck in a lot of the like ugliness that might accumulate over time for being a busy coastal city. So the buildings are all made of this like pale yellow stone that's very easy to clean. The roofs are all kind of rounded and have like a pale blue exterior that's usually painted to match the sky. And it's a little hilly. Like the city itself is, it's not a flat city by any means. It's kind of built onto the coast and onto like an up incline. So it's kind of easy to get around places. Near the Stadium Raji is, of course, the royal estate where Queen Arumi lives. She is likely already kind of headed off there to go handle business, as it were. And you see various crowds are leaving, and somebody's actually running towards your group. He looks like, if you look up a clip art for a monk, like that, like the guys who like
Friar Tuck,
like kind of yeah, monk. Like a Friar Tuck kind of monk, like that sort of situation. He hits that to a T, and he walks up to your group excitedly. And this is one of your fans who has previously blessed two of you. He works at the Cathedral of Saint Issel, which is the saint of nature. So he does wear like a little vine like crown situation, but it's always a little lopsided. And he runs up to you, and this is Brother Fred. And he smiles excitedly and is like, "Oh, that was a really cool fight. It was."
Yes, it was. Thank you,
Fred.
I'm just always really excited to get to see you guys. You're like my favorite group. I mean, obviously the Paragons are really cool and they survived the Night of Horrors and stuff. But like, you know, like I've seen them fight. You guys are bringing like a fresh new energy that I adore.
Yes, well, it's always good to meet a fan, and it's always good to see our number one fan come out and give us some praise. It's always makes the warm parts inside of us feel even warmer.
Oh yeah, that's that might be the alcohol, or it might be the prayers. Actually, I gotta do some for you. And he like stands up and he like holds his hands out and he does a like a yoga tree pose. And he does that for about 5 seconds. And he doesn't say anything, he just stares directly outward, and this is one of the prayers of Saint Issel.
And I'm just gonna lean over to Cynthia real quick and just be like, Does this take very long?
It depends. It could be 3 seconds, it could be 4 hours.
Are we supposed to do anything back? Or
I don't know what to do with my hands.
Takeru, you can roll a religion check.
Let's see. Because I'm great. Nat one.
you kind of start to do it back, and he opens his eyes. He's like, "No, don't do that. Stop. You're not allowed to do that." And he ends the prayer. And you see off to the right, like a small crowd is screaming as you see Downside is still running away with his like long extendo legs and his torso just like flying in the breeze.
He's still running.
Yeah, he's still going. He might hit the coast and they'll have to fish him out. He's not the smartest.
Man, you guys really did a number on them.
Yeah, Cynthia, I think you like scarred him like for death.
What can I say? I've got the presence. I mean, the dead man is already dead, so I see no problem.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I can't say scarred him for life. He's already done that, but...
Hey, she did say he was going to make him even more dead.
That they did.
Hi, everyone. I hope you had a good time listening to our WrestleMania mini campaign. But I know what you're thinking. Maybe you want to hear a little bit more of my voice. Maybe you're interested in cosmic horror. Thankfully, I exist in a really weird intersection of that, because I actually play in a Twitch-streamed D&D campaign as Weary, the Artificer Tiefling, who is in general having a bad time dealing with a lot of chaos cults and overall lots of cosmic horror. The moon is scary, the demigods are scary, and our DM Lucas does a great job of making sure that just being alive for that full hour and a half or so is incredibly scary. So if you want to give that a good follow and a good listen, you can find us at Ballad of the Seven Dice on Twitch and YouTube. YouTube is where you'll find our episodes the day after. If you want to catch us live, we stream on Tuesdays at 6:30 p.m. Central Time. Not only that, you can actually find recaps of our episodes on the Ballad of the Seven Dice website as well. You might be thinking, what is Ballad of the Seven Dice? It's actually a separate actual play podcast that you can listen to on your podcasting app of choice. So you get two campaigns for the price of one difficult name to remember. And I know you can handle it. So this is just between us. If you do show up and you see Weary being nervous, I don't know, do a little shout out. Say something about wrestling. I think that'd be neat. But when you're not doing that, you can definitely watch Weary and the rest of the gang be very, very nervous while they fight off the Cult of Chaos. And that is, again, Ballad of the Seven Dice. You can find us on the socials. I'm part of the Rise of Nyarlathotep campaign on Twitch. Tuesdays, 6:30 p.m. Central Time. See you there.
Thanks for listening to our show. Are We Dead Yet is part of the 1UP Podcast Network. Find more of our shows at 1uppodcasts.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at @AreWeDeadYetPod. Cover art by Ashley Steinke. Intro and outro music by Salty Dog Co. Find more of their work on SoundCloud by searching for Salty Dog Co. Spell dog, D-A-W-G. Background music provided by Andrew Sitkov and used under license purchased through Humble Bundle. Sound effects provided by freesound.org under a public domain dedication. A special thanks to Ian for guest DMing this series for us. Road to WrestleMania will be back in 2 weeks. In the meantime, check out Ballad of the Seven Dice wherever you get your podcasts or on Twitch. Bye!